Welcome to Ring Talk, the Goodwin Boxing, nowhere near weekly show, but it will be. We're getting back to it, I promise. Episode 156, we're going to absolutely nail through episode 200 this year. I promise we'll do it. With myself, Martin Theobald, head of Goodwin Boxing, Steve Goodwin. How are you, Steve?
I'm very good. Just fresh from a very exciting Saturday evening at York Hall, which was manic. So it was great. So we're fresh from that and back now planning all the March shows.
Real. We're going to come on Saturday night. It was a bit different for a Goodwin Boxing show. Things were a bit, well, different. But we'll come on to what was different about it in due course. Before we do that, though, we're going to sort of go on a bit of a whistle-stop tour around the world of boxing because quite a lot's happened since you and I last sat and discussed this somewhat crazy sport. Starting with, actually, I've just seen sort of before we started recording, Cattrall Taylor 2 is likely to be announced. Hasn't quite been announced, but those accounts on Twitter where sort of information gets fed by people at Matchroom and such like into them will apparently go ahead April 27th in Leeds.
Oh, is it? Great. That rematch needed to happen because I'm not saying the first fight was actually very good, a very good spectacle, but the wrong man won. It was quite clear that, in my opinion, Cattrall won that fight, and all that was wrong for boxing was in that decision. It was shocking. It made it look corrupt. It made things look desperately bad. And I've spoken to some actual referees myself who weren't officiating that night, and even they turned around and said those referees need their heads wobbling for that decision.
John Lewis was removed, wasn't it? Or removed himself. I'm not sure what the technical...
But it's good that the fight's happening. That's the important thing. I think it's important that the fight happens again.
Can I disagree with that?
Go on, then.
Genuinely, like, I do not give a fuck about this fight. Now, like, that's quite a harsh and frank assessment of it. You're saying it's everything that was wrong with boxing. And I agree, Cattrall won that fight and never won that fight. And that's wrong. Do you know what else is wrong with boxing? Since that fight, Jack Cattrall has fought Darragh Foley and he's fought Jorge Linares, who retired before he'd even got out of the venue that night, Jorge Linares. It washed Jorge Linares.
Yeah.
Of which we're told before the fight, Jorge Linares is going to be... Jack Cattrall's going to put on this destructive performance. He's going to go out there and really do a number on Linares. And it goes to points because it's a Jack Cattrall fight and that's what happens.
Yeah.
Jack Cattrall's done nothing in that intervening 2 years? Two years since the first one. Other than fight, Darragh Foley and a washed Jorge Linares. So what has he actually done to go out and push his case to get a meaningful fight like a Josh Taylor fight? Seemingly on the decline on the back of the Teofimo Lopez fight, you could argue sort of didn't look his best, and maybe sort of that hard upbringing, I go back to the Dave Ryan fight and that upbringing through the McGuigan setup of Taylor, maybe it's starting to show now a little bit as he's hitting his 30s. I don't care whatsoever about this fight. And I don't care. Jack Cattrall has done nothing to deserve a meaningful fight.
Right, I'll disagree. Number one, I'll agree and disagree. I agree that it's not a fight that I'd be bothered if I missed. I'd be quite happy to go out and watch a show or go to the cinema. So I'm not saying I want to watch the fight because I don't actually think it was a terrible fight the first time. I think Cattrall nicked it. He didn't win it. He nicked it just by literally adopting the right tactics. So it's not a fight I want to watch. But I feel he deserved the fight on the back of how bad the judging decision was. And I don't really care what he's done in the thing. I just think it's the right thing to get the rematch, but not that I want to watch it. So that's what I'm saying. It's just that I think sometimes in life it's the right thing, but it's not a fight I think, oh my God, I want to watch. Whereas I'd want to watch, we'll talk about probably that the Fraser Clark, Fabio Wardley. I'm intrigued by that. That I want to watch. That I don't want to watch. But I think it's the right thing to do. So we'll sort of Half agree, half disagree.
Moving on from that anyway, Fury Usyk has sort of crumbled since we last spoke and then resurrected. I'm not calling him His Excellency because I find it mad.
Now that can I just say, right? Can I just say that is total utter bollocks, right? I'm telling you, if you have somebody that comes to me and throws money, it doesn't matter how much money they throw at me to go and do a show, right? In boxing, I am not going to call them His Excellency, no matter if they give me 10 million quid. Not a chance. I'll turn the 10 million quid off. I wouldn't do it. I think it's bullshit. He's not, I just don't believe. I mean, I just think it's bollocks. I mean, and I think it looks really naff, and it just looks really odd that people are going around calling him His Excellency just because he's giving them a shed load of money.
It's indignant.
That's the word. You're better for words than I am, but yeah, that's the word.
It's sort of these. I said it recently to a few people. Sort of you got Warren and Hearn, who for years have sort of had spite with one another from a distance, but a bloke turns up who's a bit richer than they are, and now they're best mates, and they call another man His Excellency. I'm like, if nothing sums up the lack of dignity within this sport at times, it's calling a bloke who's wearing his body warmer indoors during every interview and sunglasses. The bloke's hilarious. Like, he's just sat there going, he's proper puppet mastering all of them as well. Sort of, right, we're going to do Matchroom versus Queensbury. But you roll back to lockdown and Hearn and Warren sort of said, oh, we're going to sit down and maybe we could. I think it was Queensbury that put out a poster of five versus five. Nothing ever happened about it. And then they sort of went back to sniping from afar. And I get people out there will say, well, isn't it just great for boxing that these two people are now getting together and we're getting to see these fights? It is. I understand that. Mm. But it's also soulless and incredibly sickening, really.
Yeah, I think it's fair.
And I think it proves the only thing in boxing that stops anything happening is money. It's the only thing. It's the only barrier to anything. They can talk about TV contracts. They can talk about promotional they can talk about all of it. But if you have someone with a bit more money than they have, anything happens because they've got no dignity. But that's just my view. It's not a view of Goodwin.
Has that not been promoters for years, going back to Don King in America? Yeah. Is it just been like that in boxing all the time? It's just, I mean, I find it a bit, you know, but it's just how it works. And all I'm going to say is this. They can offer me a £10 million contract tomorrow. I will not call anybody His Excellency. There's just no chance. And
well, I suppose it's also better than who people were answering to 3 years ago in boxing. But Fury Usyk.
Fury Usyk. I'm getting to the stage where I think I'm starting to fancy Usyk to win this, you know. The more I have a thing that I think that Usyk is the one that's. I think the delay probably helps him because we know that he had a later camp. I'm just starting to fancy Usyk. I think Fury could be shot, you know. I think he could be shot. I think he's. I've just got this feeling that this is his. He's going to go through with this fight in May. He's going to take the money and that'll be him done after it. And I think. I'm starting to think Usyk can turn him over.
I've thought. Since the beginning, that Usyk will win it. He seems to find a way to overcome obstacles, sort of done it for many years. And I realise Fury is a huge obstacle, sort of never had a challenge like that. But
has and I'm going to say something controversial. Has Fury really beaten anybody?
No, it's true.
Has he really beaten anybody? Go back to Lennox Lewis and Evander Holyfield and Larry Holmes and people like this who beat people. They beat, go back and look at their resumes. They're brilliant. Lennox Lewis has beaten Deontay Wilder, who has never beaten anybody, who just had
Tyson Fury's beaten, not Lennox Lewis.
Sorry, yeah, Tyson Fury. I mean, I'm saying Tyson Fury. Sorry, Tyson Fury has beaten Deontay Wilder, who in reality has never beaten anybody. He's got a big right hand, but he beat him. But, and then his only fight, he looked shocking against Joseph Parker. So he's beaten somebody who's never beaten anybody, and he beat Klitschko, who by that time was not the Klitschko that had done so well before. Has he beaten anybody? He lost to John McDermott, as we know, when he for an English title at Brentwood. Has he really beaten anybody?
I'll give him the Wilder win, because Wilder, irrespective of whatever era you put Wilder in, throughout boxing, that right hand is a threat, right?
Yeah, that's fair.
But Wilder hasn't beaten anybody himself, so sort of triangulating and trying to sort of reverse engineer people's CVs is quite difficult. Partly, though, I think, because there aren't that many good heavyweights around. Outside of Joshua, who else would they have fought that would really legitimize their CV over the last 10 years?
It's a poor era. It's a very poor era. No matter what anybody says, it's a very poor era for heavyweights. And if you go back to the Larry Holmes days, they'd have picked this lot all up and carried them. It's different level, but those fighters were at a different level. Larry Holmes, who was underrated, would have beaten all of this lot, easily. Larry Holmes in his late 20s, early 30s. Oh, my God.
You look over the last 10 years, there's not really been, outside of Wilder, Joshua, Fury, there's not been anyone that you could legitimately say world-class heavyweight.
No, you had the Klitschko jab and grab era, didn't you?
Well, I'm thinking sort of at the end of Klitschko through to today, until Usyk's come along, there's not one of them, I don't think. You look at who they've sort of fought, those that have held belts and who they've fought. I mean, outside of that, you're looking at sort of Bermain Stiverne and, Luis Ortiz. But Luis Ortiz...
Charles Martin, who had the title for a fight or two. Yeah.
Luis Ortiz was shot by the time he fought Wilder. I'm with you, really.
Usyk has beaten good fighters, even being at a cruiserweight. See, I'm starting to think, maybe he's going to be just able to be too clever for Fury, you know?
That's what I think. And, like, out of all of them, Usyk's probably the one with the best resume.
Yeah.
Sort of when you take in his cruiserweight days as well, and then what he's done at heavyweight is sort of, yeah, he's probably on paper the best of the lot of them. Are you bored of John Fury yet?
Are you? I mean, this man, what is he doing? He's a 59-year-old man. He's calling out Carl Froch, who you and I know, if they really got in the ring, even if it was a charity match, he'd be knocked out inside 45 seconds, a minute. He'd be knocked out. It's just, why is he doing it? It's just, again, it's just bullshit. It's just what annoys me about boxing. That's not even, you're not talking about proper boxers. You're talking about somebody who wasn't even, with all due respect to him, he wasn't a top-class fighter in his own day.
In his prime, Carl Froch would be, if you took him prime for prime. I know Carl Froch was a super middle, and John Fury was a heavyweight. I'm still convinced Froch would have beaten him in his prime.
Yeah. So I just think it's boring now. I just think it's boring. And I think that, I mean, he was challenged by men. I think it was, who was it putting up posters? Some guy was putting up posters all over Manchester.
Joe Egan
trying to, he was him. And there was another one, a Mickey Theo, putting up posters. Go and fight them. But then John Fury said, I want to sell out 94,000 people. At Wembley, I don't think there'd be 94 people that would want to watch it, let alone 94,000.
But you know what? To some degree, I don't blame John Fury, right? He's out there trying to make some money for doing, making a personality of this. What I blame is the boxing media that puts a camera in front of him and gives him the time of day to spout utter nonsense over and over and over again. IFL, Boxing Social, whoever, just stop filming the man. It's embarrassing for him. It's embarrassing for channels. It's embarrassing for the sport. I struggle. Again, it's that lack of dignity thing that comes up in boxing. It's an odd... The man's 56, 57, whatever he is.
59.
Sit in the background. Stop taking your shirt off. Stop offering out Carl Froch. Just don't. Don't. Anyway, better things in boxing. 31st of March, Wardley Clark, you mentioned it earlier. What a fight. What really good British heavyweight fight. Two undefeated fighters, such contrast in backgrounds, amateur, white collar, different sorts of personalities.
I think that is a traditional, The old, really good British fight. I just love it. I love that fight. I mean, it reminds me of the Gary Mason days when he was around. And it's really great. I mean, Fabio has done it and come through from small hall, built his way up through it. Fraser's had all the amateur plaudits. I just think it's a great fight. I mean, I just think it's a brilliant fight. I actually think Fabio wins, but, you know, I think it's a great fight. I think it's a great fight. And I like the undercard. So far, I like what they've done with the undercard. I mean, I think I've been a little bit critical of some of the Sky stuff so far, but that's definitely so far. I hope they're going to fill the card up. The problem is that I think they've been putting some really crappy fights on. But I hope they fill the card with Ben Whitaker and somebody like that who really does have the public interest, you know, rather than some of the other. I don't know whether you're a Ben Whitaker fan, I am, but I think that they're starting that card with Marku Kongo is really starting. You think if they really do, you know, they could really make that a super special card.
Yeah. No, I agree. Marku Kongo is a brilliant fight. Style versus sort of raw, rugged aggression. I think that's a brilliant.
I love that sort fight. I love that fight.
And it's an opportunity for Kongo maybe to sort of prove what people have thought about him for a long time. It's an opportunity for Marku to prove that he's better than people probably believe that he is. But yeah, Wardley Clark at the top of it. I just love it. I think it's a great fight. But I love Fabio Wardley. I love what he's doing going around without a contract anywhere and just sort of looking for opportunities at whoever's going to give him a good rate. And I read a piece of him where he's talking about, you know, there's a risk to doing it this way. There's no long-term contract. There's nobody to build me back if I lose. I admire sort of taking that approach. I think he's a very, very impressive man. I like Wardley.
Yeah, so that's great. But the fight looks good. Two great fights. I hope they put the rest of it on, because I think they've got some people on their roster who you'd go and have a cup of tea on when they're fighting. And I think, you know, I think they've got some good stuff on their roster, but some pretty not watchable fighters as well. So, you know, hopefully I think that show, they could really put together an absolute storm of a show there with any luck.
One that you mentioned there on their roster, Ben Whitaker. What you said, you're a fan of him.
I like him.
Yeah.
I just think he puts bums on seats. He's different. He's a Marmite character for people, but I like him, and I think he's somebody that I'd put the telly on and want to watch. Whereas we were just talking about Catrell Taylor. I don't really, Catrell's good, but I don't want to watch him. But I like to watch Ben Whitaker, and I know a lot of people dislike him, but to me, he's a character, and that's what you need. You can look at some other fighters who are fighting on TV who are not characters. It's boring. It's boring. And he's not boring. So, great. Bring him on. Bring it on. And Ben Whitaker should hopefully be on that card. And hopefully they'll put some more. You know, so I'd like to see them put on some real 50-50 things on the undercard, whether they be English titles or you know British fighters fighting, rather than this Mexican against this one. And you know the other one's 16-1 on. And you don't want the undercard stacked with that, because otherwise it becomes boring apart from the top two fights. So hopefully they won't do that.
No, I agree. I agree. And yeah, Ben Whitaker, I'm a huge, huge fan of him. I love how much he annoys people as well. I just think it's hilarious. Sort of, he's levels above that guy that he beat. I can't remember the guy's name. But that same guy went the distance with Dan Aziz. He's no mug. He's not, I think it's only over 8 rounds of Aziz, but the way Whitaker handled him, and then that sort of sparring footage that came out afterwards of Whitaker with Felix Cash up at the GB setup, he was doing similar with Felix Cash in sparring. And I love people banging on about how disrespectful it is. Right, that guy got into that ring to earn money. He signed a contract knowing what Ben Whitaker's like as a fighter. He's got a manager who can always advise him not to take the fight because it's bad for, you know, your long-term reputation, because Ben Whitaker's going to take the piss out of you while he beats you up. But he knew all of that and he signed the contract. So how Ben Whittaker chooses to beat him up is down to Ben Whittaker. And if he can, how many times have we sat through prospects on TV in fights where they're dull, in fights where they're six rounds, eight rounds, where they're levels above a journeyman, and journeyman in a bit of a stretch of a word, it might be somebody with a winning record, but we know what the outcome's going to be, and it goes the distance, and they never put their foot down. Same criticism I've got of Jack Cattrall's career. He's levels above Jorge Linares, never went for the finish with him, never made it enjoyable. Ben Whittaker's the absolute polar opposite. He makes it enjoyable to watch. You're on the edge of your seat. He's a highlight reel that sort of the younger fans will engage with and share on TikTok and Snapchat and such like. He brings in new eyes to the sport for people that actually want to watch him, rather than going eight rounds, 10 rounds or whatever. And then when his corner said, right, go out there and finish it this round, Ben, he went out and finished him, and he did it in style. And people want to say, oh, it's disrespect. What's disrespectful is a 56-year-old man offering out Carl Froch. What's disrespectful to the sport is having Hearn and Warren calling another man His Excellency because he's got a bit more money than them. I don't find it disrespectful to the sport that Ben Whittaker beat the absolute hell out of the bloke and had fun doing it and was a highlight reel doing it. I can't get on board with that at all.
I agree.
That's my rant over for now. We shouldn't go so long without recording, Steve. I get on a high horse about this. And my camera goes blurry. Conor Benn. Where are you at with Conor Benn?
Right. Okay. So Conor Benn, the man who got cleared, who didn't get cleared. The man who suddenly loses all his punch power. He got off on a technicality of jurisdiction.
And allegedly.
Allegedly. This is what the people are saying. Allegedly got off on jurisdiction rather than being cleared. That is what the word is around the place. And if that is true, he's not been cleared, right? He's been cleared. If he'd been cleared, as such, would the boxing board have lodged an appeal? Because they would have just, you know, when other fighters have got cleared, they tend to sort of give them a bit, and it all sort of filters through. So, yeah, I mean, it's quite clear that he wasn't cleared in the word that we would believe cleared, which is found not guilty of any wrongdoing. We think he's off on a technicality, and that's not the same thing. And then suddenly he's not knocking people out anymore. So it does make you question it.
I question lots of things around it.
Your view?
My view. I think it's quite clear that there's a difference between Conor Benn that we've seen in the past and Conor Benn that we see now. Whatever that difference is made up of, I don't know. He's not knocking people out. He knocked out formerly world-level fighters. You know, Chris Algieri. He's a former sort of world-level fighter. Did an absolute number on him. And yet, you know, these blokes in America, Peter Dobson and the Mexican, I can't remember the name of, couldn't put a dent in either of them. Some people say, well, they were bigger men. They were sort of 150 pounds or whatever. They're also sort of club-level fighters in America. So they're not Chris Algieri. I find that I need to be careful how I word this to some degree, but I don't really care, so I won't. When Conor Benn got cleared and Matchroom did that whole video of Hearn on the phone to Conor Benn, I found it hilarious, actually, that Coogan Cassius tweeted me that day saying, ha, 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 or something like that. And I thought, right, okay. Like, I've been quite clear. I just want... You can't have the crocodile tears of promoters and managers and such. Like, when fighters get hurt in the sport and, you know, worst case scenario, die, if you also can't advocate having a clean sport. And if you want a clean sport, you have to take these things seriously when fighters get pinged for doing things that they shouldn't be doing. And that's not just Conor Benn. That's any fighter in the world. So for media bodies to sort of be so one-sided within the argument, because they're essentially mates with the boxers, and I realise in this instance, Coogan, for instance, isn't a a journalist by his own admission. He's not a journalist. He's a bloke who sort of holds a camera and asks questions. And I'm sure he's got personal relationships. But how can you trust the sort of the information coming out of these channels when actually that's the view of it? And then sort of take that, extrapolate that view through to when you see interviews with main people within the sport after tragedies in the sport, and actually the questions need to be asked properly when these things happen. Why, you know, if some the next time something tragic happens within the sport, that's got to be turned around and said, well, don't try and support people that have potentially done something wrong in the sport and maybe harmed others, and you get Tony Bellew on board just to go, well, he's a Brit, he's my mate, he wouldn't do it. It all sits uncomfortably for me. The whole thing sits uncomfortably. And I don't like it. It's a really shitty situation. And I think it actually puts a bit of a sour taste in the sport, and I think turns people off of it a bit as well.
I don't know what happens. I've gone past caring now, but if he carries on calling out, you know, just fighting in the States against people two weight levels lower and all of that sort of stuff, I don't have any interest. I don't watch his fights. It doesn't interest me at the moment. I'd only be interested if he went through the process and it was all done right, but I have no interest in Conor. I personally have no interest in Conor Benn fights at all.
No, and I find it bizarre. Sort of, you fight Peter Dobson, then call out Devin Haney. I'm just, what? Like, it doesn't add up. And where are you going to do it? And why not just come back and do whatever's needed under British jurisdiction? But I'm bored of it. And when Conor Benn was coming up and when he was on that knockout streak, I was such a big fan when he was turning on Spanish and doing his sort of his Latino thing and really sort of getting into that sort of viciousness and bad man element. That's what I wanted out of boxers. What I don't want is ones that get done for, you know, drug cheat issues and then don't answer the questions. I was actually offered to interview him recently. I won't say with which article or thing it would be with, and I said, yeah, fine, I'd love to. But it hasn't really come off, so that's a shame. Because I said I'd love to, because I actually feel for him a little bit that he doesn't seem to ever get asked the questions that would give him the opportunity to answer. And maybe that's because he told people not to, I don't know, but I'd have liked to have asked the questions. Moving on. Let's talk a little bit about some Goodwin boxing persons. Let's go with Brad Pauls, because since we last spoke, the Brad Pauls news broke of where he's going to be fighting next.
Yeah, so Brad fights on the 16th of April for the British title against Nathan Heaney. Big fight for Brad. And it's a voluntary defence by Heaney. They wanted Brad. They see Brad as a soft touch. That's obvious. You know, whatever they... You know, Nathan Heaney, by the way, is a lovely man. He's very respectful. Do like him. I do like Nathan.
He's cool, isn't he? He's cool.
I really like Nathan Heaney. I just think he comes across really well, really classy. He's a classy individual. But they picked him, obviously, the Warrens and people as a soft touch. So Brad's got a big, big chance. He's going to give it his all. And we'll see. Hopefully he'll be good enough to win the British title. It's going to be a difficult one, but he'll be sacked against him. He's obviously in the away corner on a Frank Warren show against a Frank Warren fighter. It's not going to be easy, but Brad will give it his go. And as far as I'm concerned, I mean, I've looked after Brad. He won the Southern Area. He's won the English title. I've delivered him a British title shot. And therefore, as a manager for my fighter, I've done everything I can possibly do. Now it's down to him. So the door's open if he can go through it. Done everything in our power. Then, you know, I can be proud of the job we've done for Brad. And I'm sure Brad's proud of what we've done for him. And he's now got the big... He always wanted to fight for British title, and he's got the opportunity now.
It's great. It's great all round. Like you, I'm a massive Nathan Heaney fan. And I think he just comes across like a really good bloke. That said, if you're going to fight for British middleweight title... I'm not saying it's an easy fight or that Brad definitely wins or anything like that, but actually Nathan Heaney for British middleweight title is one of the potentially easier end of the spectrum for that fight, rather than like a Hamza Shiraz. I wouldn't fancy that for anyone based on what we saw at the weekend. And it's not, you know, Nathan Heaney looked really, really good winning that British title, showed a different side of himself in doing so, boxed really well, sort of. But I've got question marks over his sort of level. And he has himself as well, listening to him on the George Groves podcast. He was quite open about sort of where he always saw his ceiling, and he keeps exceeding it. I think that's fair. So I think for Brad, it's a great opportunity. Great opportunity.
Yeah. So there we go. Big chance for Goodwin fighter.
Yeah. One Goodwin fighter who's already won a British title very, very recently. Zach Chelly.
And Commonwealth he won. So if you remember on the last one we did, I told everybody that that was the bet. That was a bit, he was back from 5-2 into 5-4. And I said that was an outstanding bet. It really was. It was, I was so confident he'd win that. And he's done it. By the way, I didn't think, I thought that Jack Cullen was very, very difficult to box against. I think he got caught by Zach Chelly early on and he went into a mode of, say, negativity, but very defense orientated. It was very scrappy. The fight wasn't a great spectacle, but we got the win. It didn't matter. That fight didn't matter how we did it. It was the fact we did it. So, you know, now we move on and we're going to be looking to do a defense of that title in the early part of the summer this year.
Have you got a broadcaster that's working with Zach now?
No, he's also free of contract, but we plan to work with Sky. While we haven't signed the contract, I gave them my word that we would give them first options, and that's what we're doing. So we're obviously going to have a meeting with them and sort out what we're doing, and I've got a plan in my head as to who we want to box next. He's due his mandatory, and we'll be delighted to accommodate the mandatory, and I think you'll see Zach even looking even better in his next fight. So we've got a plan of action. So we're ready.
Yeah, I'm gonna touch on the performance quickly. I know you referenced it in there. The fight was a bit scrappy. I think last time we spoke, you said like you were confident we were going to see an explode, like a different Zach Chelly, and Barry O'Connell would sort of getting him under Barry's wing and sort of sharpening him up a little bit. Do you think that happened, or do you think it didn't quite happen as much as you hoped it would?
But correct, the result, I think the way Jack Cullen fought didn't allow him. He beat Jack Cullen to the jab. He was a better boxer, and I think we saw more than that from him, because before it's all wham bam, hasn't it? It's been very much, you know, going for the knockout. I think in this situation he was looking the odd time, but he outboxed Jack Cullen because Jack Cullen was only, you know, really interested in grip holding, and it was just a messy fight. So no, I don't think we saw that, but I did think that we did see that Zach could box. We saw that he won the fight clearly, but I don't think we've seen anything like we're going to see when somebody comes forward to him, comes at him. That's what I want to. That's when you'll see him at his best, when somebody really wants to come at him. Then you'll see the Zach Chelly that I think that Barry's been working with.
Yeah, so the good news is, no, we didn't necessarily see it, but there's more to come.
For sure, for sure.
And one other Goodwin boxing title holder, current title holder. I mean, you've got lots at the moment. One I wanted to touch on, Lauren Parker. What's going on with Lauren?
So Lauren
being off on cruise ships around the world. And
well, yeah, I mean, quite disappointingly, she won the European title, and you normally get 6 months to do a voluntary. But obviously, the European body is in Italy. She was given an Italian last time. They have not. They've served her mandatory on her within 3 weeks of her winning a fight.
Wow.
With another Italian girl.
Okay.
Let's just leave it there. We're working on things at the moment. But let's say I was a little bit disappointed that within a month of her winning, you know, her title, while she was running around on a cruise, they issue a fight. They issue a fight to negotiations or to go to purse bids. You're thinking, really? The girl's just won it. She only just won the belt and gone away. And now we've had Christmas, New Year, and now you're throwing the mandatory on her. And there's no talk before that if she won, she had to waive her voluntary.
Yeah.
So that, to me, again, is all that's wrong in boxing.
So are you looking at other options
potentially? We are looking at various options at the moment as we speak. Yeah, so I should have some more, hopefully have some more news in a week or two's time, but there may or may not be. But we're looking at various options because we wasn't expecting that to happen.
Yeah, yeah. All right, stuff we can talk about now. We mentioned it earlier, a bit of a different fight week last week. So you got the Albanian sensation, Jürgen. I'm not going to try and pronounce his name because I'll get it wrong. So you can.
Ulduday.
Yeah. All right. Jürgen Ulduday. So he had a full-on press conference week as well in the build-up to this,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, we had the press conference on the Thursday, the weigh-in on the Friday, all in. You know, it was just like you would see on Sky TV. It was all done, but it was all done for Albanian TV. So it was exactly the same setup as you would find for Sky. It was very interesting. It was very good to be part of that and help them. But yeah, it was a great, really enjoyable week, and he rounded it off with a very good performance on Saturday night. We got a few of our fighters out on the undercard to give them a run out, so that was handy for those that were able to do it. And your call was they had all the tickets and sold it out inside 24 hours. So it was the atmosphere was electric.
There's various questions around this. I don't know if you can answer all of them or not, but so we'll give a bit of context here. Jürgen Ulduday against John Frank Mendy, IBO Mediterranean Cruiserweight title. Jürgen won it on points across all three cards quite convincingly. How do you keep coming across all these Albanians that can sell out York Hall in record time, each of them? Because Florian Marku started off on Goodwin boxing shows. You've got Jürgen, you've got the guy that fought back in October, whose name
is Dennis Balazzi.
Dennis, yep.
I manage Dennis, so he's my fighter. I manage him. So, yeah, so it's what we look after him. He's back out on the 23rd of next month.
Awesome. So, yeah, for people at home and me, how do Goodwin Boxing keep sort of tapping into these Albanian...
What happens is we've been approached by more Albanians than we've got. So we've had two more Albanians approach us in the last month on top of the ones that we have. But we have decided to work with two Albanian people. And so what happened was the man that works with Jürgen Ulduday is a chap called Christian Bochy. And Christian Bochy was the man that brought Florian Marku to the UK. So Christian obviously dealt with us when we built Florian Marku. As you know, the story with Florian was we built him. I got him the TV contracts and the job was perfect what we did. And then I don't know fallout Florian. Florian, we operated on an ongoing basis. There was no contract as such. And he decided at that point to sign with Sam Jones. They then took up a contract that was already pre-ordered. I'd already got all the contracts signed. So it was just like the work that I'd done was taken over by somebody else. So Christian, who doesn't work with Florian anymore, he knew that Florian's success and build to the TV platforms was me. It was just somebody took it. Florian decided to let somebody take over all the work I'd done. So when Christian took over Jürgen Ulduday last year, towards the end of last year, he flew over and had a meeting with me because I was the only person that he trusted and the only person that he wanted to work with in the UK. So that's why he came to me. And Aldo, who looks after Dennis Balazzi, had come to me last year being recommended. I was recommended by so many people. So he brought Dennis Balazzi to me. And I think when you deal with a lot of people, especially Albanian people, they respect those that are totally honest and that they can trust and that they feel comfortable with. And it's hard to find in boxing. So they come to the people they can trust. And I am the one they can trust. Hence, in Albania, other fighters come to me through other people. But out of respect for the two people that I deal with, which is Christian and Aldo, they are the only two people that I will work with the Albanian boxers. So other people can work with other promoters, whatever they want, but I have my people, so they will, you know, I work with them, and that's exclusivity for us to them. Because I think there's got to be a sense of loyalty backwards to the people that put their faith in you. Everybody can jump on the back of what Aldo and Christian are doing with us, but that's not right. I don't want to have seven different Albanian contacts. I'm quite happy working with the two.
Got you. Right. So, yeah, Jürgen Alderdai brings in Albanian TV with him as well. They want to broadcast his fight. So you end up with an Albanian TV crew at your call. Johnny Nelson down there doing a bit of sort of presenting. You ending up getting broadcast live out to Albania. It's a mad one, isn't it?
Zach Celli, Lauren Parker interviewed in Albania. It was very, they were down there.
It was
great. I mean, apparently I'm quite well known in Albania now. So
never have to buy a pint in Albania.
Christian said, "Oh, you're very well known in Albania now." So okay, that's great. So it was a pleasure to work with Christian on that. I don't manage Jürgen. It was a one-off thing that we've done, and we helped them, and we're there to help Christian when he needs help. Dennis I manage, so we'll be working with Dennis to build his career in the UK. He's based in the UK, and I'll help Jürgen when Christian needs my help.
Love it. Love it. So, yeah, good win for Jürgen as well. Picks up that IBO title and moves on. We might see him back at York Hall again in the future, perhaps.
Yeah, very possibly. There's talks about, believe it or not, going to Munich in April, possibly back here, and then potentially Las Vegas or Madison Square Garden.
Why not? Why, he's been in Times Square this week as well. So,
they're talking about hiring Madison Square Garden to do a show, or potentially a hotel in Vegas. That's the bottom. And then going back to Albania for a humongous fight in the summer, potentially 25. But yeah, so there's lots of ideas that Christian has. And obviously, I'll help him whenever I can.
Yeah, I'll help you, Christian, as well. Out in Vegas, out in Times Square, out in Madison Square Garden. I am huge in Albania. Massive. I've got a huge fan base.
We need a new age boxing podcast in Albania, Martin, I think.
I've got massive numbers over there. I'm a huge... on that undercard on Saturday night, you had Hugh Goodwin boxing fighters out. So we'll run through them very quickly. Ali Reza Gadiri against Jack England.
He's not my fighter. He was somebody we put on because he's in the same stable as Jürgen. So that's Tony Pill's fighter. Jack England gave a really good fight. He's learning his ropes on the road, and it was actually a really entertaining fight. It was, although they gave it 40-36, the rounds were very close. Jack England gave a good account of himself, and Ray's rally will move on and do whatever he's doing with his career.
Nice one. Bill Al-Fawaz had a bit of a run.
He looked really good. I've got to say, he fought Jordan, and Jordan is in great order. Bill Al-Fawaz looked really good. I was really impressed. I thought he looked better against Jordan than he did in his title fight. I thought he looked really, really good.
Good. Ross McGuigan beat Nathan Lee.
Ross McGuigan moves to 5-2. Ross is now 38. His dream's a Southern Area title shot, and that's what he's aiming towards. You know, he's out again in March, and then he's aiming to get his record to a level that the Southern Area will allow him to box for a title.
Awesome. And then the other one was one of my favourite things in boxing, when you get two away fighters fighting each other.
Yeah.
Michael Mooney against Jake Smith.
Michael stepped in because the home fighter was Albano Jr. Andy Gills, but he couldn't get his medicals through in time. So Michael Mooney just took the fight, and they battled out a draw. So good luck.
Yeah, so you end up with two sort of journeyman fighters, both of whom could probably do with a win, because that's quite useful every now and then for the, you know, yeah, the road fighters. And then they end up drawing. Tremendous. Yeah, so good on them. Let's move on, conscious of time and sort of not exceeding an hour, because people would be bored of you and I by that point, I'm sure. We're going to go into these in more detail over the next couple of weeks, but you've got a couple of really good shows coming up. March 9th, March 23rd, there's 10 title fights coming up.
Boxmania is on the 23rd, and I was actually aiming, Martin, to do 10 title fights on one show. That was my aim here. I was going to try and do one night, 10 fights, 10 titles. That was going to be never done before in boxing. Unfortunately, I couldn't do that. primarily because of Ramadan, because a lot of my fighters have to box early on in the month, so I've had to split it. So we've got on those shows, we've got Commonwealth titles, English titles, Southern Area titles, English final eliminators, English eliminators, battles of undefeated fighters over 10 rounds. It's amazing. The cards are amazing. Put them together, the two cards together, they would be sensational. Two separates are great, but the Boxmania label is on the 23rd, for which at the moment we've got five title fights on the 23rd, which is, and they're crackers, absolute crackers. We can talk about that. I mean, this concept of Boxmania is really taking off. We're not, you know, some shows I see people interviewed, they got 6 and 4 rounders and claiming it's full of 50-50s. I mean, that is just so ridiculously stupid. And anybody that buys any of that nonsense, look, I'm telling you, 6 and 4 rounders are not 50-50s. They're not. They're staged for people to develop and win. The 50-50s are when you get into 10 round fights that mean something. But anybody that buys a 6-4 round card of non-title fights is 50-50. It's just crazy. These fights are not all 50-50. I mean, some I would say on the 23rd, some I would say are in favour of fighters that I want to win. It might be 60-40s, but there's no 90-10 title fights on the 23rd. One of the title fights, a couple of the title fights on the 9th are more one-sided than title fights would be. I'm just being honest. The 23rd, though, and the other three on the 7th, no, they're not. They are really humdingers. They're humdinger fights. So we've got some stuff to look forward to.
But also, no title fight is a 90-10 fight. Like, it wouldn't be put through in the first place. So it might be 75-25. And as your job as a manager sometimes is to find your fight at the best opportunity to have those.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that happens. But yeah,
most small hall shows blow them out the window, these shows, both of them. They blow them out the window.
Yeah. So we're going to go into them in more detail over the next couple of weeks. But if you haven't got tickets, March 9th, March 23rd, York Hall, look them up. They are, don't bother looking them up. Just go and buy a ticket for them anyway, because you'll enjoy either one or both. March 9th, March 23rd.
Brilliant.
Anything else in the world of boxing to cover?
Not really. I just think we've got an exciting time ahead in March, and we're looking forward to it. We've got lots of fights I'm working on that I can't discuss at the moment. One really exciting fight that I spoke to you about before we switched on.
Yep.
I won't be able to reveal that for another month, but my God, it's an exciting fight for one of our fighters on a TV platform. And we're working all the time on our fighters. It's not just about, we build them on our shows to give them that TV opportunity to try and knock the door down and break through. And that's what we try and do as managers. Sign some brilliant talent in the last 6 weeks. I think we've signed another 9 boxers. Some really great debutants are going to come out. Some boxers that we've taken from other people who have let them down and things have gone wrong for them. We're working on signing a real top class amateur. Real top class who's possibly, you know, could go all the way. So many exciting things going on at Goodwin Boxing. And I think I've said before, and I'll just conclude with this, we don't have the sexiest brand, but what we have is reliability, decency, the unparalleled success of a management group that nobody can compete with. And what I mean by that, it's okay being handed the fighters that are at the level. We develop, we resurrect careers. Nobody has got the resume south of Manchester that we've got. What is happening, and I feel it, is people have gone elsewhere for the sexy brands, and they're all coming and they want to come back because they realise where the best place is. So, I mean, I remember Kevin when he was working with me, he said to me, there was a period where we were sort of struggling against the sexy brands. And he just said, it'll all turn around, it'll all come running back. And it's exactly what's happening.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. And I remember sort of post Waddy Camacho, when you sort of revitalized his career and got him onto a Commonwealth title, you started to sort of see that again then. I think maybe the Zach Chelly factor, the Lauren Parker factor, getting Brad Pools onto big platforms, creating the opportunities for the likes of Linus as well. Lots of different things that are going on that sort of bring the attention back and sort of a further evidence that it's not just at the lower level that you can operate. There's that higher level as well, and it creates opportunities.
Because Andy Gill was telling me, one of our trainers, he said, do you know what people say about you? I said, what? He said, you only can take people to Southern Area English level. And he doesn't tell me who says that, but he says, but it's the biggest load of BS ever. Because these people are saying it, I'd say to them, well, how many world champions have you had? How many European champions have you had? How many Commonwealth champions have you had? How many champions have you had, internationals? Because they won't have even got a minuscule of what we've achieved with the 56 champions. So why are people peddling BS like that? Because it's total rubbish. And anybody that believes it must be an idiot. Because it's so clear, isn't it, who is creating all these champions over 11 years of management, 14 years since I've been in the business. It's a phenomenal record. But that's what people say. But I think it's becoming more, you can see now, people can see it more. Because there's actually, as you say, the Lauren Parkers and everything else, people can see it a lot more. And Brad Paul's getting his chance, you're dead right. And there's more to come. But yeah, we've got a lot more to come. We're working on lots of exciting stuff. And some of the stuff we're working on, I just can't wait to hopefully conclude it and be able to announce it all.
I love it. And you seem to have your energy back for boxing at the moment as well.
So. I really have. Genuinely got it back. I feel with boxing like I felt in the prime of it. I don't feel like I felt a couple of years ago when I felt fed up with it. I actually feel really re-energized. And it's probably because I've got my whole life generally in better order. In other words, my financial business is exploding. I've got really good staff. I've got the whole model is just good. And everything is running a lot smoothly. I can designate my time properly to everything. I'm not so stressed as running. I'm quite calmly able to do everything. And so now I feel so re-energized for it. And you just want to do the best you can do for the people you work with. And can't wait to get started this year.
Good. And that means we'll be back every week discussing what's going on. Probably getting myself cancelled within boxing for talking about stuff that shouldn't. But yeah, that's all right.
The problem with boxing, and that's another thing just before we conclude, I know what you're saying. That's why I like TalkSport and Simon Jordan. He says what he thinks. Listen to Carl Froch's podcast, Froch on Fighting.
Very good.
You like it as well. It's good. Simon Jordan, Carl Froch, they don't care. They say what they think. And that's what's lacking in boxing. Everybody says what they're trying to do because they've got an agenda, and therefore they'll pander to anybody just because of the agenda. These people are not. And as Carl Froch says, it doesn't matter to him. Nobody can buy him. And opinions are important. Nobody wants... You know, things that you've raised over the years that have been so proven to be so true, and yet at the time you get called all these things, but most of what you have said in the past has proven to be true. I can't say most things you've said, they've proven to be totally true.
I think there's two sides to it as well. There's those like Simon Jordan that will say what he sort of fancies without an agenda, that are lacking, but also the other side of it is the amount of people that are so thin-skinned within boxing that you say something about and they take it so personally, and it sort of affects them seemingly so much that you're like, any other walk of life, so this is meant to be a sport of hard men and what have you, and sort of alpha males, but seem to get so wound up by things that are said that I end up with sort of DMs sort of all the time from people within boxing about something that I've said or fighters I've got an opinion about that it may not always be positive. I just think I can't be bothered with it.
Do you imagine a journalist saying Mikel Arteta made a serious error, he played the wrong team, he played the wrong players, he employed the wrong tactics? Do you imagine that journalist being banned from going to Arsenal because he criticised Arteta? Of course he wouldn't be. But in boxing, you can be banned.
But in boxing, you've got such a small pool of people that A, sort of care about it, and B, have an audience that want to listen to it, that there's such a small pool of them that you can ban them fairly easy. And that's why you end up with so many people that pander to the the biggest promoters is because they need it for their sort of viewing or listening or whatever it may be. I've never really sort of subscribed to that idea.
No, you don't say.
Right, brilliant. Steve, we'll be back next week.
Thanks, matey. You take care.
Excellent. Take care, all.